Okay, thank you for inviting me to speak, and I'm sure glad to be here on such a warm sunny morning. You know, talking about DNA technology, a lot of people are just automatically going to shut you out and say, God, that stuff's just so complicated. And then when I get done, a lot of people come up to me and say, I don't know a darn thing what you just talked about. I think what's important here is, and I think all of us, including the scientists, have done a really poor job of kind of bringing this subject forward, in that we were bringing a subject forward at the same time we were developing the technology. And so we spent so much time trying to explain the technology that we lost sight of why we were even doing this. So the reason I'm standing up here today is to help us do better SAR selection. You know, had a lot of discussions this morning about, you know, managing family businesses with, you know, large families and so forth. So, you know, one of the key things is you have your cow herd big enough that you need more than two or three bulls. That way, when you get in this big family debate over which bulls you're going to actually turn out, that way everybody can at least turn out the bull they wanted to. Okay? And so if you've ever been in that situation, you know, it can be, if you only get to choose one bull, it can be a knockdown drag out of who gets their way of which bull you choose. But really what we're talking about when we really get into all this DNA technology is adding new information to our current systems to be able to rank the animals from one to number 1,000 or however many bulls we've got, so that we can choose who we're going to use and also call off the bottom end. And that's just another important thing to throw out. You're going to hear, you know, some kind of biotech breeding type information today. You know, and a lot of times we spend all of our time talking about how do we use the technology to select the next great one. You know, technology that really works well, though, is the one that helps us cull off the bottom end, because we all know, you know, from the school of hard knocks, that great cowherds were all made by ruthless culling. So this is another tool that can help us do that. So let's talk about DNA technology. You know, just a little quick poll around the room. How many people still got turkey in their refrigerator from last week? You know, Joe does. You know, geneticists are to blame for that. Okay, so this is just a kind of cool slide to get us to thinking about genetic improvement and doing sire selection and changing the population of animals, you know. So on this side of the slide over here, you know, we got what a turkey carcass looked like, you know, in about 1966, you know, probably when we first started televising those Thursday afternoon football games. And then now here is what the turkey carcass looked like in 2003. So dramatic change in a turkey carcass. I don't got to put a bunch of EPD DNA technology up there, right? You can see that dramatic change. And that's why we still have leftover turkey. You know, we still get, it's only 6 days post-Thanksgiving, so we still got, you know, a big old thing about this big in our refrigerator home. And you know that it's, you've really changed things, too, when your wife starts saying, you're going to have a lot of these leftovers, when she starts saying, I need somebody to carry the turkey out of the car to put it in the refrigerator. And then you have to clean out half the refrigerator to even get your turkey in there, right? All of that is due to tremendous change of these animals due to genetic selection. Or birds, might make that correct. It's not an animal, I guess it is a bird, okay? But when we talk about beef cattle, we usually start talking about genetic improvement. Each time we select the next set of sires, they should have been a little bit better than last year's sires. And so each year we make a little bit of improvement. And so we typically look at that as a genetic trend line. And you can go to almost any breed association website and look at these types of lines. And so on this axis over here, we'll have, you know, an EPD level or a breeding value. And then on this axis over here, we have years. So, you know, like yearling weight is probably the most predominant thing we've changed, you know, over the last 20, 30, 40 years, however you want to calculate that. That'd be this red line on here, that our cattle are a lot bigger at 1 year of age or 365 days of age than they were, you know, many, many years ago. Okay? Another little background piece of information, though, is that when we talk about DNA technology, we need to think about it as what underlies all this is DNA sequence. And I'm going to talk about sequence a little bit today. And that DNA is really a pretty simple thing. It's just made up of repeating units of A, G, C, and T. And then Watson and Crick taught us that the reverse complement should be T, C, G, A, but however, this should have been a G, but it's a T, so that means there was a mutation, or there's a marker there. And these simple markers like this, what we call single nucleotide polymorphisms, are very easy to assay. And so technology is developed where we now have SNP chips and companies that can market the SNP chip and people that can use the SNP chip to generate breeding values and so forth. And the reason we can do that is because this is just such a simple process, and also there's lots of them throughout our chromosomes. Okay? So the gut of my talk is I'm going to talk a little bit about why we're using genomics today. So genomics means we use all the DNA information, not just a few key genes. Okay? So when we say all the genetic information, that means all the chromosomal information in a given sire. And then we're going to talk about what GEPD means, genome-enhanced EPD. And then we'll talk a little bit about evolution of DNA technology, not only where we've come from, but where we're going. And then I'm going to end up talking about how do we keep up with this advancing technology. Okay? So why do we talk about genomics? Well, to understand genomics, I said it's nothing more than A, G, C, and T. It's a lot like computers. Okay? And so a lot of you have probably seen this. This was like a 1950 or 60 article that was a picture that was published in, I think, Popular Science that said they predicted by the year 2000 that's what the home computer would look like. Okay? But we know by year 2010 we were into the smartphone era. Right? And the reason I bring this up is, computers are really nothing more than ones and zeros. That's how they work. That's the machine language. And so it's just the combination of ones and zeros and then how fast they run that makes us do Windows. So, you think, wow, that's pretty cool because we all probably got a phone in our pocket. Most of us do. A smartphone in our pocket. And there's more computing power now in a smartphone than what NASA had in the late 60s to send a man to the moon. Okay, I didn't make that up. That's a true fact. Okay? And so DNA technology being more than A, G, C's, and T's has exploded the way computer technology has kind of exploded. Some people say, well, I'm not really into that. But if you're using a cell phone today, if you're watching your television, it's digital TV. You may not know it, but that's the technology that underlies it. And so it should make kind of sense that DNA technology exploded kind of the same way the computer technology exploded. So, we first started out in DNA technology. The GeneStar tests were pretty well known and prominent. Those were kind of the first real marketing of DNA technology. And then we expanded to what we knew as SNP technology, 50K. Technology with 50K means that there's 50,000 genotypes in each one of these little wells, and so we could have put 24 animals on this chip and came and generated 50,000 genotypes. And the question is what comes next? Now we're at the HD level. We have a human chip that's got 4 million SNP on it and so forth. And so, this technology is going to continue to advance the same way computer technology is continuing to advance. So it's just part of something we need to be knowledgeable of and understand how we're going to use this stuff, information, in our selection. Okay, another thing that we need to talk about is why do we use genomics? Why not just a few DNA tests? Well, because a lot of our traits that are really important to us in beef cattle production, and we can use yearling weight, and I think this trait up here is LM for longissimus muscle ribeye area, they're controlled by many genes. Okay, and so that's what this graph shows us. This graph is actually called a Manhattan plot, and each colored bar as we go across is a chromosome. So that's chromosome 1 all the way over to chromosome 29. So cattle have 29 autosomal chromosomes and then the X and the Y to make 30 total. And so each one of these dots was a spot off that SNP chip, and so that's a spot on a chromosome. Okay, and so what you should see here is there's lots of dots. And then on this axis over here is we have some kind of statistical significance. So the higher the dot, the more important that spot was to longissimus muscle. And so what you should gain from this is a term that, has been a very, very old and used term in animal breeding for years, is it's polygenic. Many, many genes or many, many spots across the chromosome control the trait longissimus muscle or ribeye area. So we shouldn't just look at one or two markers for that. We should look at a bunch. And the reason we call this a Manhattan plot is because if you kind of look at the dots and relate that to the Manhattan, New York City skyline, there's lots and lots of buildings, and so there's lots and lots of effects. Okay? So let's talk a little bit about the evolution of EPDs. I'm a new person in the group at the Colorado State, what we call the Center for Genetic Evaluation of Livestock. We calculate EPDs for breed associations and, breeders and private entities across the world. And so I joined that group as we are now putting genomic information into that process. But let's talk a little bit about the history of how EPDs have evolved to the point we are now where we have genomic information. So, some of the first important EPD work started with what we call the animal model, or we started being able to use the pedigree to generate EPD values, and then we moved to multi-trait models. So if I need to know something about yearling weight, I can also use information about weaning weight because those two things are highly correlated. We spent a lot of time in recent years and still working on this a lot of calculating multi-breed EPDs. A lot of breed associations now include multiple breeds in there. So they may be, you know, like a Galvey Angus influence type animal. And so they want a multi-breed EPD so they can rank the animals to do sire selection. And now we're starting to add genomic information into that. Okay, and I'm going to talk about the two different ways that we're doing that. One is by use of what we call the molecular breeding value, and the other one is genomic relationship matrix. Now, again, don't get hung up in the details. When this is all said and done, it's a fairly simple process. What comes out of it is a value. That value's plus or minus something. Maybe the animal's a plus 9. One animal's plus 9, and the next animal's minus 8. So we can rank the animals on that and use that information to do selection. And then the other important number that's always with that is the accuracy. How accurate is that information? And that's where gaining DNA type information really helps that process in gaining accuracy. And so I'm going to talk about that as well. Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about molecular breeding value. What in the heck does that mean? Well, it's kind of an old term. Okay, now it's a term that's getting to be 5 to 10 years old. And what it means is that somehow we took all of this spots across the chromosomes and we came up to a way to make it numeric and use it. Okay, so let's just say we got a locus, one spot here, where big A is worth more than little a. So let's say big A is worth plus 5. So if an animal has the genotype of big A, then it'd be plus 5 plus 5 equals 10. Okay, and that animal has a much higher value than the animal that had little a, and let's say that little a made minus 5, so it was minus 5 minus 5 makes minus 10. Okay, and then the heterozygote was plus 5 plus minus 5, and so that animal got a value of 0. Okay, and so we would do that type of thing for all 50,000 of those genotypes and then sum them all up, and we could say that's a molecular breeding value. Okay, and of course that all goes back to the history of EPDs that are based on an additive model, and the example that I gave was an additive model of plus 5 and minus 5 and so forth. So we could use that to generate molecular breeding value. And so with that type of number could be very easily used for a multi-trait EPD. So let's just say we wanted to make an EPD for ribeye area. I showed you Manhattan plots of ribeye area. So if we had pedigree information, we had ultrasound ribeye area information. That's what this picture would represent. We have carcass ribeye area information. Somebody actually went to the packing plant, collected that data on steer progeny. If we had yearling weight information, because animals have probably got big yearling weights, probably also have fairly large ribeye areas, and we got MBV, we could put that all together and do a multi-trait, you know, EPD estimation for ribeye area. So that's how a lot of the beef industry, in a very simple sense, is trying to use a lot of our genomic information, is to put that information into their EPD system. Okay? So why would you want to do that? Well, again, it's about the plus or minus number and the number next to it, the accuracy. Well, the idea would be to try to gain more accuracy for our EPDs. Now, for our really prominent AI sires, that's probably not that big a deal. But most people, particularly in a commercial setting, are probably buying yearling bulls. So how much accuracy is in yearling bulls? Well, in their EPDs at that time, a lot of times we say they're non-parent accuracies. They're pretty low. And so gaining DNA information is a way to add accuracy to that. So this is a graph, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing. It's pretty busy, but it's just an example of what would happen if we used genetic or DNA type information, genomic information in the EPD. So if we had a trait like weaning weight, okay, and we said it has a heritability of about 0.3, okay, we could come up here and go over here and we'd say, well, you know, in kind of in a non-parent sense, young bull, you know, it might have an accuracy around 0.15, okay? So if we looked at that and all we had was DNA information on the animal, that's where the accuracy level would be for a trait that has a heritability of about 0.3. But what if we started putting the information together? Maybe we get their parents had that kind of information in a database system of breed association. We have DNA information, and we have that animal's own record. We have the actual weaning weight on that animal. If we start to put things together, that's what this dotted purple line represents. And so what we would see is that our accuracy level is going up because we have more information. Okay? And so in theory, we could have sampled our calves for DNA, you know, maybe it's spring branding, pretty easy time to sample them. And then by the time they got to be yearling bulls, all this information had come together, and we got more accuracy in a yearling bull EPD. So that's a big advantage to us. Now, in this particular data set, a colleague of mine, Allison Van Eneman, published this. They had a big Angus data set that they used, but not the huge Angus data set like the American Angus Association has. But notice that the accuracy levels here are still fairly low, okay? It's not revolutionizing, you know, our ability to select yearling bulls, but it is making it a little bit better. And that's something I think is just important when we talk about DNA technology and so forth. And I might be as guilty of it as anybody. We talked about, boy, we're gaining the ability to do this cool technology, and we use words like it's going to revolutionize our beef industry and things like that. Well, now that I'm getting a little grayer and a little older, you know, I think about things that revolutionized the beef industry might have been things like windmills, barbed wire fence, and stock trailers. Okay, what we're talking about here is the DNA technology made our current system better. It didn't revolutionize our industry, but it is a tool that we can use. Okay, so I'm going to spend a little bit of time, though, talking about DNA technology and what it does to the dairy industry, and just talk about a little bit of differences in what that technology might mean to a dairy situation versus how it works to the beef situation. So the dairy industry uses the technology in a little bit different way. They kind of make a molecular pedigree, for lack of a better term, and they call that the genomic relationship matrix. And so they use the DNA technology to identify different parts of the chromosome, and then they use that kind of as their pedigree matrix. Okay, and I think this is just kind of a neat example of how that would look. So if this blue spot right here, blue, meant something really, really good for milk production, then, you know, we end up with this individual here. These are two chromosomes. It got blue all the way back from this maternal grand dam. Here was a sire here that got that blue unit, and this part of the blue chromosome went all the way to this individual. So presto, we got a much higher milk producer. Okay? And when we think about the terms of accuracy, okay, that has had a big impact on dairy production, or at least the ability to do the EPD system, or what they call PTAs in dairy. So if they have the non-parent level, what we call just a pedigree-based accuracy level in dairy cattle, they call it reliability, but it'd be about 0.35 or 35%. With DNA technology, though, and let's look at a trait like percent fat, that'd be percent fat in milk. Okay, with DNA technology in Holsteins, they could take that non-parent value of 0.35, add DNA technology, and now that value's at 0.85. So at a very, very young animal, they have an extremely high accuracy level on a breeding value. Wow, now that's a pretty significant thing to have happen in animal science. And that's why we see things like turkey carcasses have changed so much because the technology worked. Or in dairy cattle, you know, we've doubled the amount of milk production that the dairy cow can put out in the last 50 years. Part of that has to do with the technology, but also it has to do with the specificity of the industry. If you think about it, the dairy industry, you know, it's a very similar system now across the U.S. We got Holsteins and confinement. We feed them everything that they need. The rations are very well balanced, very well management systems, and they have one to two, three maybe traits that are important: milk, protein, and fat. It's a very, very focused situation. And so when they went into this situation, their data was very robust. You know, their first genotyping effort, you know, 3,800 well-known AI sires were genotyped immediately, you know. And so they were able to make all of this happen. And so, you know, it was just kind of the perfect storm for the dairy industry to put this technology to work. The beef industry is just very different. We could have two Angus breeders that live right across the road from each other. One chooses to select their herd more for maternal traits. Another breeder chooses to select more for growth traits. And so it's just things are very different. We have much more diversity and so forth. And so if you look over here at these other breeds like Jerseys and Brown Swiss, they didn't have near that success that Holsteins did either. It's just because it's a data management type of issue, at least when we're talking about adding accuracy through DNA information. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what does a GEPD program look like. And GEPD means genome enhanced EPD. Okay? And so I asked this question to a lot of breeders today. I said, do you use, you know, genome enhanced EPDs? And a lot of breeders will say, no, I don't do any of that. few breeders say, yeah, we're real heavily involved in DNA technology. But the reality is everybody's using it today, whether you realize it or not, because that genomic information is going into the genetic evaluation. And so that is influencing all the EPDs that are calculated within a breed. So everybody's using it. Okay? And so here's kind of how it works. So typically an association, you know, develops a relationship with a service provider, and we have two main service providers in the U.S., Zoetis, which was formerly Pfizer, and then GeneSeq, which is a component of the company Neogen today. They do the genotyping, and then that information, that genotype information gets into the EPD system, and then the EPDs go back to the breed associations. It's published on a website. You can look up the bulls, or it comes out in a bull cell catalog or whatever, and therefore we're all looking at it so that we can choose bull A over bull B, okay? And then the long term of that is where that is impacting our rate of genetic improvement. So we're all using it, but in general, that's how it looks today. Okay, but like I said, just like computer technology and cell phones, DNA technology is not going to quit where we were at the last slide. It's continuing to evolve. You know, in about 2006, we got the first bovine genome, and that's when all of this DNA technology really started to explode. And so it was a very interesting story that $51 million were put together to sequence the genome of one inbred Hereford cow that we call Dominette. Okay? Of course, of the L1 Domino bloodline that anybody that knows Hereford pedigrees is very familiar with. Okay? And the reason that decision was made to sequence Dominette was that because she was of the line one breeding program, highly inbred, she was also should be very homozygous. Because she'd be very homozygous at a lot of loci, she'd be very, very good for future research. And so we did that. Okay? But since then, now we have genome sequences on many people in every livestock species, cattle, sheep, goats, yaks, horses, whatever. And now we're getting lots of other animals sequenced, and we're getting all kinds of new tools developed. Okay? And the bovine is probably the farthest along in that. And the reason probably the bovine is the farthest along in that is when NIH put up the first money to sequence a person or two to gain this, the decision was made, let's do some other species that would be very biomedically related. And they chose the cow because of the long history of animal science physiology, because we had all this knowledge that could be used in study of physiology. Okay? And so that $51 million, NIH actually put up about half of that. USDA put up a chunk. A group here in South Dakota, and I don't know whether that was the state government or whatever, put money into that, and a few other groups, but the total price was $51 million. Okay? Today, we are now in a world where I've already talked about the 50K chip, but, you know, my last count, I think there's at least 10 chips on the market today. And so that may sound a little confusing, you know, about, oh my gosh, you know, what does all this mean? But it is kind of an exploding field. And I think the real reason we're seeing so much more tool development is the challenge is, and of course I know this is the magical question, is what does it cost? Okay? Well, 50K chips, you know, for a while now, they've been $80 to $100. The big HD chip, you know, in that neighborhood of $200. But there's all kinds of effort of, you know, can we make chips that make it easier to impute up to the bigger chip? Or can we make a smaller chip that gives us the same amount of information and do it for half the cost? So there's a lot of those kind of efforts going on and a lot of new products coming on the market. I think everybody just needs to be aware that, you know, we're going to see a lot more evolution of DNA technology the same way we're seeing it with computers and cell phones and so forth. Okay? This is just a term I want everybody to get familiar with, is because as we move to these new chips, you're going to hear this term a lot. It's imputation. And imputation in general, you don't have to read all this. This is just some fancy verbiage from a paper some colleagues of mine and I just published. But what it means is we took lower level SNP chip information and we imputed it up to a higher level. And so we now know the genome, so we know the loci. We know where every one of these markers exist on the chromosomes. And so if I know this piece of information and I know this piece of information, and I've got a lot of other animal genotype with this, I can use computer algorithms and I can convert all of my animals with this kind of data up to this level. Okay? There might be some errors in that, but let me tell you, it does work. Okay, it does work. And so our competing meat industries, poultry and pork, are using these technologies. And so, you know, they're genotyping low numbers of animals and imputing that up to higher levels. So that's something you're probably going to hear that word a lot if you talk to people from DNA companies and so forth. They may say, well, now you can do the lower level chip. It's a little cheaper and we'll impute up to a higher level. And that's what they're talking about. And I think this ruler kind of makes a cool way to look at that. Okay. I've spent a lot of time talking about DNA technology and how it fits with our EPD system. And that is a really good fit, right? And you don't have to know behind the scenes how all that stuff works. All we have to know is the plus-minus value that comes out of that, that comes out on a website or in a bull cell catalog or a sire summary, okay, so that we can rank bulls and make selection decisions or culling decisions, either one. However, though, you know, breeding is still somewhat of an art because there are still so many traits that are economically relevant to our beef production systems that we don't have EPDs for, may never have an EPD for, or it's something in the way future. You know, we're spending a lot of time talking about feed efficiency, but this is a pretty good list of things. Fertility, health traits, you know, are we talking about BRD? Are we talking about, in my part of the world, we work a lot on high altitude disease, you know, brisket disease. You know, can we develop DNA technology that helps us select animals that are better for this? How about grazing distribution? You know, we're out in part of the world where most people talk about ranch sizes and pasture sizes and sections, not acres, right? So grazing distribution is a really, really important trait. We don't have any EPD for grazing distribution. So there's probably going to be a lot of effort made into trying to use the DNA technology to actually start to make breeding values for some of these kinds of things. They probably will be low accuracy, right? But even at the low accuracy level, being able to rank sires for some of these things could be extremely important for our production systems. I like to give this example and talk about feed efficiency real quick. A lot of effort going into feed efficiency. Earlier speaker, Steve Paisley, was up here talking about feed efficiency and GrowSafe systems. And that is a great technology. And we're getting bulls out of those systems, and we're getting feed efficiency EPDs on the bulls coming out of that. And we have one on our campus at CSU. But the thing we need to realize about that system is, you know, as good as that information is, man, if our feed intake, residual feed intake crew worked as hard as they could all year, they might be able to push 600 bulls through that in a year. But if you look at Colorado, where I'm from, the size of our state and the size of our cow herd, we probably need 6,000 new bulls every year coming in as yearlings just to keep our cow herd at the size it is, right? So that's a pretty big deficit. So DNA technology, you know, for things like feed efficiency and those kind of things, they could really help us a lot move that forward where we can get those breeding values on more and more animals with DNA technology. So, you know, as much as we talk about EPDs, and my colleague Mark Enns, he's a real expert in that. He'll be up here next. He can, you know, he has 20 years experience of calculating EPDs, can talk about that. Well, for some of these things here, you know, DNA technology development can do a lot for us. So I guess my message is, just like if you're waiting for that new app this one young man was talking about today, he didn't say he was very young, but he is, you know, that new app he was selling, just like you're waiting for that, you know, these things are on the forefront for us. Our group at Colorado State, we're working on both health traits. We got two BRD projects we're working on. Then my group is working heavily on the high-altitude adaptability with DNA technology. We've already genotyped close to 2,000 animals and moving forward with that. So we'll be presenting this kind of data in the near future. Okay, so let's talk about more of the evolution of DNA technology and what it's going to mean and why we got to keep up with it, right? And I'll be the first to admit, you know, there's two things that really kind of unnerve me today. Is one is when I have to turn this phone in and get a new one, whenever this one dies or I drop it in a water trough or whatever. That's kind of unnerving, you know, because you're like, you got half your life in your phone. Like, I only know one other phone number today. I still remember my home phone number when I was like 14 years old, but I don't know any other phone numbers. They're all in here. So if I lose this, it's really unnerving when we start talking about technology advancement. But when we talk about DNA, we need to realize that it's exploding the same way computers are. So there's Dominette again, you know, and it was about $50 million to get her sequence. But today we're getting, in the bovine world, we're getting sequence on bulls for about $5,000 a bull. So there's lots of bulls being completely sequenced globally. And so what that just means is, and there's actually a project called the 1,000 Bulls Genomes Project. Most of the bulls have been done in it first. We're Holstein bulls. You know, we're going to have more and more of this kind of information. And so it's going to be really challenging for those that do research or work for breed associations or DNA companies to mesh this into that system of simple breeding values. So I'm going to challenge each of you to work hard to keep up with these technologies. Okay? So how do you do that? So I'm going to make some suggestions how you do that. One thing you could do is genotype yourself. Okay? So there's a commercially available product out there called 23andMe. It's actually been in the news a lot over the past few days. Okay? And I've done it. So for $100, you can genotype yourself, find out a lot about your genotypes and so forth. And I just encourage you to do that. You'll learn, not only will you learn about yourself, but when you start sitting down and thinking about DNA technology and what it means to a cattle breeding operation, you're going to know more about it. It's a good way to practice. Okay? Also, you need to understand, as we start talking about all this DNA information, it's going to take a lot more computer infrastructure than we do now. So if you are a breeder with a breed association or you sit on a breed improvement committee, trust me, you're going to be talking about expanding your computer capabilities to handle all this big data. Okay? And then the last thing I just want everybody to realize is we're talking about keeping up with technology and moving forward. We need to understand some simple facts about how do we get money to do research and move forward in the beef industry. Okay, this is an important thing right here. So that's $50 billion. That's what our country spends in research dollars right now in the health arena. NIH, that's their budget. It's about $50 billion. And then NSF, they spend about $10 billion, and that's the second line. But they spend about half of that on biological sciences, which would include animals. Okay? When we start talking about USDA, of what we spend for research, okay, in agriculture today, we're this number. Okay, what we spend for animals, okay, is $150 million. That's for across the whole United States. That's the federal budget, about $150 million. And then we got to split that in the animal science world up between poultry, pigs, dairy, few aquatic species, fish, and so forth. So when we start talking about moving forward with all this technology, even though we have great capability, we have got to build new relationships to do that, because kind of the classic old ag experiment station way of doing research and we release it to the public, you know, those funds are minimal to gone in our funding systems today. So we have to have new ways to do it. We're going to have to work together as breed associations, breeders, cattlemen, DNA companies, you know, to be able to keep pace, you know, even though we have the ability to do this technology, to translate it, you know, into making breeding values to help us make better breeding decisions. Okay? So, you know, just leave you with this thought. Don't be confused by all this. What we're always talking about when we talk about DNA technology is genetic improvement and sire selection. That's where all of this fits. And our biggest challenge today is we're inundated with lots and lots of information and data. I don't know how we're doing on time. Okay, we'll have to cut it off there. I will be here all day. You're always welcome to call me, email me. I'll be at the bull sessions tonight, and look forward to talking and meeting people all day long. So thanks a lot.